Welcome to Boston Confidential, Beantown's true crime podcast. Boston is a great city, but there's more to it than the Freedom Trail and Fenway Park. There's a startling underbelly to the city, and Boston Confidential will take you on a guided tour of the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. My name's Barry McGuire, and I'm your host. I'm a 20-year private investigator on the streets of Boston, and I help run a company called Impact Due Diligence Investigations. If you need anything in terms of investigative services, feel free to contact me at Impact. If I can't help you personally, I'll certainly direct you to the right person or agency. All right, guys, let's get to it. We got a pretty good response to our second episode in our series on Rachel Rollins, the former Suffolk County District Attorney and later U.S. Attorney, who seemingly inserted herself into the Suffolk District Attorney's race, where she bent over backwards and may have actually committed crimes for Ricardo Arroyo, her candidate to replace her as Suffolk County DA. And during this scheme, she concocted a media leak saying that the leading candidate was under federal investigation and was about to be indicted. And she spread those stories through the media herself. And then when they were printed in the media, she chastised her underlings for this leak. Can you imagine that? And there's much, much more. That meltdown she had with the news reporters near her home. And after this run-in, she goes on to Twitter and compares this to an Emmett Till-type situation and saying something about the ravings of a white woman who she had a disagreement, a verbal argument with in a parking lot, and that was it. Just a strange, strange series of events, but it was typically Boston, I'll tell you that. I actually got a lot of emails on this case, and I kind of just wanted to touch base. This was a true crime story, in my opinion, that yes, it did have a true crime bent to it, but it was legitimate fodder for Boston Confidential True Crime Podcast, right? Because I can't believe she's actually not going to be prosecuted, but I think that was the threat. Resign or we're going to prosecute you for violations of the Hatch Act. She chose to resign, and somehow she'll find her way back into political life in Massachusetts, but if she hasn't shown you who she is by now, you'll never open your eyes. All right, guys, let's get on to this week's episode. We got to jump back a little bit into the Wayback Machine to 2014. I can't believe it. That's almost a decade. It's, what, 9 years now? But this is the case of the Blackstone House of Horrors in Blackstone, Massachusetts. And the central figure in all this was Erica Murray. She does have a male partner in this, and it is a cornucopia of dysfunction and abuse. So I have to tell you right now, guys, this case contains instances of child abuse, child murder, and just all-around dysfunction. It's going to be a difficult one. And if you can't get through this episode, I certainly understand. But please be advised from this point forward. All right, guys, let me tell you a little bit about Blackstone, Massachusetts. Blackstone is in Worcester County, southern Worcester County. It actually borders Woonsocket, Rhode Island. A lot of people from the metropolitan Boston area are not familiar with this area. It's a former mill town, and as I mentioned, it borders Woonsocket, Rhode Island, which was also a mill town, and Woonsocket has city-level problems. Blackstone doesn't. There's not a hell of a lot of industry in Blackstone. I think most residents travel outside to go to work and all that. It's bordered on the western side, I believe, by Millville, which is a similar town, right? Millville, it's a mill town, right? But a lot of people on Boston's South Shore and the North Shore just aren't familiar with this area at all. It's kind of, I don't want to call it hard scrabble because crime is not a huge problem. They do have some drug issues like most communities do, but it does back right up to Woonsocket, Rhode Island. So I don't know if I'd call Blackstone hardscrabble, but it's sort of close. And to be quite honest, I think earlier in the 2000s, I drove by this woman's house on a daily basis. So that's kind of strange for me. Where this occurred was right up the street from the police station, probably a quarter mile or so from the police station. But there is a tremendous restaurant in Blackstone that I've been to a few times. It's called the Good Stuff Barbecue. I believe it's right on Main Street, kind of close to the police station and town hall. It has excellent barbecue. So if you're ever in Blackstone, try out the Good Stuff Barbecue. All right, guys, let's get on to the protagonists in this story. Erica Murray was 35 in 2014, and her partner was Ramon Rivera. He is also listed as Raymond Rivera, and they lived in Blackstone, Massachusetts, in a house originally owned by Ramon Rivera's sister. And like I said, guys, I've driven past this house, I believe, during this time frame. And these are all decent homes. They're nice homes. There's multi-families on this street, single-family homes. It goes under a train bridge. There's a bridge right there. It's not a bad part of town. And the house, as I see it, and I see it when I drove by it, but also in pictures, the exterior of it, you'd have to put a value of about, I don't know, $350,000 on this house. It wasn't a bad piece of property. So Ramon Rivera's sister lived there, and I believe she moved out around 2006. And that is the year of the first Department of Children and Families, DCF, got involved with Erica Murray and her kids. They suggested a cleanup plan at this time. The original report, and I don't know who reported the family to DCF, but the original report was for filthy living conditions. And again, DCF made these recommendations to clean up some services and all that. And apparently the case was closed. So what happens with these two, Romeo and Juliet here? Erica Murray, 2001, she was 17 years old, and she met Ramon Rivera, or Raymond Rivera, and he was 25 at that time. That's a little curious to me, but she was working in a fast food job, I believe McDonald's, and he was working at Staples, and that's how they got together. 2002, they have their first child together, and 2006 is when Rivera's sister moves out of the house, and I think it just goes to hell in a handbasket after that. In 2011, Erica Murray gave birth to a baby girl, and Ramon Rivera had told her, "I want no more kids after this," and he was adamant about it. Was he smart enough to wear a condom to make sure that didn't happen? No, he left it to Erica to take care of. And I think Erica is, I hate to say this, guys, she's like a low-functioning IQ. And I don't know if Ramon Rivera is much better, quite frankly. Now, as an investigator, I've spoken to people in this predicament where they're just very low-functioning. And I've had to interview people like this for professional reasons. And sometimes they're so out of it that it seems like they're speaking a different language. A few times in my career, I had to speculate that these people may have had some inbreeding at certain points. And it's just so strange because they can't really comprehend the simplest facts. They can't put together cause and effect. And I think that was this couple here. And it only gets worse from here. It only gets worse. So guys, the birth in 2011 was seemingly done by Erica Murray alone, probably in the bathroom. She didn't tell this guy, Ramon Rivera, she was pregnant. She's a tiny thing. I don't know how he couldn't see it. And I don't believe he didn't see it, by the way. I think he's full of excrement, but I'll get to that in a bit. So she's pregnant in 2011, gives birth by herself without any hospital, no birth certificate, nothing. And she tells Ramon Rivera that she is being a long-term babysitter for this child. She confines the child to a dark room. It would later come out that this child never saw the light of day. But I'm getting a bit ahead of myself here. In 2014, Erica Murray gave birth to what was thought to be the fourth child in this family, again in secret, without telling Ramon Rivera, no birth certificate, no hospital. Absolutely insane. So in 2014, this case would break wide open and it would take the state by storm, really. It was a media firestorm. It is absolutely heartbreaking, and I guess we should just get to it. So 2014, somehow Erica Murray is away, and a neighbor by the name of Elizabeth Betsy Brown was taking care of Erica's 10-year-old son. She was a neighbor and lived next door, and they were friends of the family, but the boys were close. The 10-year-old boy and this neighbor were close, and he was staying with them. But at a certain point, he comes from the house and asks the neighbor, how do you get a baby to stop crying? Now, the neighbor testifies, and I'll put this in the show notes, that she goes in and is almost knocked over by the stench of the home. There are dirty diapers stacked up 2 feet high, and she almost could not go in. It was so bad. She was shocked, and she goes in and she sees two children, one girl and one boy, and they're covered, I believe her words were, they look like they were dipped in feces. And there was feces-smeared children's handprints all over the place, and these kids were starving to death. Now, these were the two babies that they had in secret, and to be quite frank, it is my honest opinion that Erica Murray was trying to kill them. There's really no record of these children, so if they disappeared, it would be unlikely that there's a murder charge involved. When I go a little further, you'll understand my reasoning in this. So this was beyond hoarding, guys. I don't know if I'm getting that across. There were roaches. There were fleas. It was nasty. These kids were on a filthy mattress and some type of bedroom upstairs. The house was separated. The basement was kind of cordoned off from the rest of the house, but the room these children were in was covered in feces. Apparently somebody had thrown some food on the bed for these kids to eat. Thrown it on the bed, that's what I'm saying to you. And man, where was love in this situation? Man, where was God in this situation, brother? So I believe this neighbor, God bless her, Mrs. Brown, Betsy Brown, takes the kid, the baby, I think she could still hold him, but this was an infant, takes him outside and just couldn't believe it. And she called the police. The police are right down the street. Cops show up. And man, it goes from bad to worse. In the constant crying from that house, these kids were starving. That was a cry for food. These children were feral. It would later come out that the beautiful girl had never left the house. She had no muscle tone. She was confined to the house. And it would later come out she'd bang on the walls. She was a feral child. They both were. I don't know what happened here, but this is Nazi-level horror. So the cops come in quickly. They get the story from Mrs. Brown, the neighbor. They go in, I believe they see the other child, and they call DCF, right? The cops do a preliminary search, and they can see just from stepping into the house, it's infested with bugs, rodents, it's nasty. And they call DCF, and DCF comes pretty quickly, because this is an emergency situation. And I saw some testimony, and I'll put it in the show notes, by the DCF officer or employee who shows up. He went in and carried the girl to his car, and he had to take her out of the house to examine her because it was just ready to be condemned. I don't know if I'm getting that across, but he's a big guy. It's kind of an emotional testimony. He's a big guy. He carries this girl, 3 years old, to the car. And as he's putting this girl into the car, he moves her hair away from her ears, and her ears are infested with maggots. So we seemingly have a dichotomy with Erica Murray, because she set this up with the neighbor where her son would stay there while she was, I don't know where the hell she was overnight, right? But she was out of town. And the vibe I'm getting from Ramon Rivera, he was in and out of this house, but he is fully responsible as well. But somehow, some way, this goofball wasn't there all the time. And he has a story all of his own, and it's equally as bad as Miss Murray's. So Miss Brown's testimony was just heart-wrenching. There was empty baby bottles on the floor filled with maggots. Like I said, there was food thrown on a bed to feed these kids. There was remnants of it. And it seems as though she was trying to kill these two kids. And let me tell you my reasoning on it, because the state police come in to this case. Everybody knows this is going to blow up, right? So they get all the right agencies involved. State police come in with the Blackstone PD, and they do a search of the house. And it was ungodly, quite frankly. Let me tell you what they found. They found one dead baby. They found another baby dead, fully diapered, in a backpack. The stench is so horrible in there, they didn't know where it was coming from. And I think that's what prompted them to do this search. They had to move all this crap out of the way. And when I say crap, I mean physical crap, human crap. So there's two dead babies, one in a backpack, one just thrown into a back room. One dead dog, two dead cats in this house. A short time later, I know I'm jumping around a bit. Both kids, the little girl who had maggots in her ear and her little brother, were found never to have seen sunlight, guys. Never been outside, never had their sun on their face. Never played outside. Nobody really spoke to them. A three-year-old girl, again, she was a feral kid, would just bang on the walls and rock back and forth. That was the police testimony. That's what this kid was doing when they walked in, right? So we always talk about PTSD for police officers. The DCF and the police, the Blackstone cops and the state police who went in there should have been treated for some in-depth PTSD, right? Because, man, this was a horror show. I don't want to compare it to walking into a death camp or something like that. I don't want to overplay it, but I think you get where I'm going here. It was that bad. So it seems like the two kids that Ramon Rivera knew about, they were allowed to live somewhat normal lives. Like I said, the 10-year-old boy had a friend in the neighborhood, went to school, and I believe his sister. But there was four kids in total. Cops and DCF immediately removed them to area hospitals. And it's horrible. So there's four live children in this house and two dead babies and several dead animals. Can you imagine that? So when the kid went to the neighbor and asked, how do you stop a baby from crying? That was on August 28th, 2014. And that's the day the kids who are living went into temporary foster care. The three-year-old girl had no muscle tone. She couldn't walk on her own. And again, I told you about her ears. And September 10th, I think it was, because it took so long for the cops to get a plan. They had to go into this house on September 10th with hazmat suits, and they found a third child, another baby. So all of these babies who were deceased in the house were either dressed in onesies, pajamas, or diapers. So they were alive at one point, right? But there's the remains of three dead babies here. So Erica Murray gets arrested, and not for homicide at that time, but there was enough reasonable suspicion and probable cause to arrest her for obvious child abuse, and she was held on $1 million bail. But it came out pretty quickly. She cooperated with the police, but I just think she's so out there, but whatever. She cooperates with the police, and she said the two children that were allowed to live somewhat normal lives, I can't believe I'm saying that, she instructed them, and I believe she abused them. But Erica Murray instructed her two kids not to tell Ramon Rivera about the other two kids that were living upstairs. But I don't believe this for a second that this Ramon Rivera didn't know what was going on. He was confined, he says, to the lower level, the basement. Don't forget, this is his sister's house. His sister owns this house. They're there in the house because of the Rivera family. And he stated that this little Erica Murray, and this guy, Ramon Rivera, was over 6 feet tall, over 200 pounds. He said that she didn't allow him to other parts of the house. But the testimony was this three-year-old girl would bang on the walls night and day. And this was a Cape-style home, so they're not in some giant estate where this loser wouldn't hear. The cops found some marijuana growing operation in this loser's basement, and he was arrested for that. This was before marijuana legalization. He had some grow plants, you know, lights and all that. And he had some marijuana buds packaged for sale, so they arrested him for possession with intent to distribute marijuana. But I think they really just wanted to hold him, and they did. And don't forget, Ramon Rivera's story just falls apart because when anyone goes into this house, it's overwhelming, the stench. And you're going to tell me that doesn't permeate to the basement? That's complete and utter hogwash. But Erica Murray gave this guy an out. She had told her kids not to tell him about these feral children living upstairs. And I just can't believe it. I don't believe for a second that he actually believed it. There were diapers, and I'm talking 2 feet tall stacks of crappy diapers, of baby formula bottles with maggots in them. You know what that smells like? You ever kick one under the couch and you grab it a few days later? Well, imagine a year later what it smells like. Flies, feces, just nastiness. And this guy wants you to believe that he didn't know what was going on. The kids couldn't go downstairs to see Dad, and Dad didn't go upstairs to see them. Bullshit. So Erica Murray was charged with 2 counts of homicide originally, and a third count of basically improper disposal of a corpse. And what she said is just astounding. When the prosecutors and the police interviewed her, she stated that Ramon Rivera made it clear that if she got pregnant again, he was going to leave her. But despite this, these two dopes have unprotected sex all the time. And one of the things that popped into my mind is, well, where did they have unprotected sex? In that flop house, right? Nastiness. That's what you're thinking. Hey, let's have some fun time here. Well, I don't know. In the corner, there's 150 shitty diapers, right? Man, I could throttle that guy. I really could. I'm just so pissed off. But let me collect myself. So it seems from 2011 to 2014, she obviously got pregnant 3 times. And you're going to tell me she has 3 pregnancies and this guy is still having sex with her and doesn't notice the changes to her body. He's had two other children. He knows what goes on with the woman's body during that time frame. But they have unprotected sex. She has those three kids, gives birth to them by herself in the bathroom of this squalid house. And she tells some convoluted stories about how the kids die. She left one on a bed and went to do something, came back, and the baby was dead. She put it under the trash accumulating in the house and left them there. But what I believe happened was she had these children. She got afraid that Ramon Rivera would find out, and she killed them. That's what I believe happened here. And that's what the prosecutors thought happened as well, hence the murder charges. One of the problems during this case was the remains were so decomposed, it was difficult to tell if any of these children ever took a live breath. Yes, we can determine that they passed away, but the defense can be able to say they never took a breath, so it's not murder. They were stillborn or whatever else. Do you put a diaper on a stillborn baby? Do you put a onesie on a stillborn baby? Probably not, right? But we're dealing with people so far outside of the normal realm of society that how do you even deal with them, right? The courts are for somewhat civilized people. And Erica Murray was functioning also like a feral human being, giving birth in a bathtub when there's a hospital literally 2 miles from her home. Like, man, the psychological makeup of this woman and this loser, Ramon Rivera, how do you wake up with no consequences on your life, right? Like, she was just going to go away for whatever time frame and come back to this horrendous life with maggots in her daughter's ear. But that seemed to be the roadblock to murder charges. They couldn't really prove that the children took a live breath because of the state of decomposition. And to be honest with you, the state of Massachusetts was up in arms over this case. People wanted to rip these two limb from limb. And the media coverage, I don't know if anybody remembers, it was wall to wall. And when she went into jail, she looked horrible. She looked like she was frail and ready to fall apart. But when she came out for one of her hearings, she couldn't make bail, so she stayed in the joint. But she looked so much better. But I've heard people who talked to her, officers who've talked to her, that she is so stupid and low functioning, it's hard to get angry with her. It's almost like you're dealing with, you know, a 9 or 10 year old child. They continue to have unprotected sex. She gets knocked up 3 times. That's what I was saying, guys, about cause and effect and the intelligence level of some people. And again, I go back to inbreeding. I've had a little bit of experience a few times as an investigator, not to this level. I'm not trying to make that comparison, but they're just so dumb. They seem like they speak a different language. And that's what was reported in this case. Ramon Rivera seemingly had a normal functioning IQ level, but if you're going to tell me he didn't know about what was going on, he didn't know what that stink was, just BS. But to be quite frank, man, the court case begins to fall apart because they can't really prove that the kids took a live breath. And it's kind of a weird situation. The entire state of Massachusetts wants to get torches and pitchforks and burn these people at the stake. But on the other hand, you really just have this simpleton in front of you. You know what I mean? It kind of takes the wind out of your sails, right? And you're like, what do we do with these people? And again, the case starts to fall apart. So Erica Murray was held on $1 million bail from the original child abuse charges They did charge her with homicide, so I believe there was bail, so she was getting credit for time served. The same thing from Ramon Rivera. They stayed in the joint, and pretty soon the wheels come off the murder charges because, again, they can't prove the children were actually alive. The state is forced to offer a plea bargain, and Erica Murray takes a plea bargain on the child abuse charges, and I didn't really even want to go through them because it's just so disheartening. But she takes a plea on those minor charges. They sentence her to about 5 to 6 years in prison. But in the interim, she stayed in jail, so she was getting credit for time served. So after the sentence comes out, guys, she only has about 8 months left to serve. She's out of the joint right now. It's so hard for me to say that. She should be in prison for the rest of her life, or at least a mental hospital. Give the Commonwealth something. And what scares the crap out of me to no end is that this woman has another boyfriend now, probably. And there's no way to keep her from having more children. Her children were taken from her permanently. And I guess we can only thank God for that. But it was the same type of deal for Ramon Rivera. He's out of the joint now, too. And I guarantee this schmo has another girlfriend. Imagine that. That would be a great follow-up. I'm not going to be able to do it because I'd kill that guy. But it would be a good follow-up to see. I guarantee you he's dating or married now. How does a woman see that, right, and say, yeah, there's my guy, take me to the altar? But I bet you it's happened. I don't think Ramon Rivera was ever charged in the homicides, and I do believe he was indicted on the child abuse charges, but again, he stayed in the joint. They're both getting credit for time served. He's out now too, guys. We've got 3 babies dead in that house. 2 live children abused every moment, have never been taken out of this dark room. They've never seen the sunlight. They've never walked in the grass. They've never went to the beach. And these 2 shitbirds are out living among us right now. So guys, I forgot to mention, when they told Erica Murray, I believe it was in August 2014, August 28th, they told her, we're taking your children. DCF was there, and she had no reaction to them taking the children. Her only response was, I think one of the cats got out. Can you look around for the cat? And I'm sorry, guys. I know I'm going to head off a couple of your emails here. Whatever happened to the 2 children who never saw the light of day? I don't know. Both these losers were stripped of their parental rights, and hopefully they got the intense, and I mean intense, assistance that these children needed. I believe it was the neighbor, Betsy Brown, who said the girl was rocking back and forth, and it was reminiscent of the Romanian orphanage videos from the 80s and 90s out of Romania, where they just rock because they have no love. Children die without love. I don't know if people realize that. They need to be held, kissed, cuddled. Or they turn feral, and that's what happened here. And I pray that that girl gets the help she needs. I think the little boy would probably do better, but man, that poor little girl. All we can do is pray for them, and I urge you to do so, but I think that's really all I have for you here. I gotta put this one down and walk away here, guys. I'm gonna leave you here on this house of horrors. I'll get on to the next one for you, but damn, this one was tough. All right, guys, I'll see you on the flip side. If you need me, reach out at Barry@BostonConfidential.net. I know I'm going to get a lot of emails on this case. I felt like we had to do it, though. All right, guys, see you on the flip side.